couple of guys lined up on side here. Let's see what they've got on. O'Neill with a little pooch kick.
Yep.
They've got a couple of guys who can field that ball cleanly. And Brandon Stewart's on it. He'll pick it up untouched. And it looks like a Ticat touchdown.
Low driving kick. Banks from the 42. Banks has room to run. Gets by Fiola Godino, and Banks has one man to beat, and he is gone. There's a flag down. Brandon Banks, touchdown. As the CFL's most electrifying returner does it again.
Welcome to Podski Wheelie. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Hey, Mike. So it was a bye week for the Ticats this week, which I know we had a show last week, but it's essentially a bye week for us. What did you spend your bye week doing?
Well, not too much. I watched some CFL football, as usual. Played some Donkey Kong 2 on the Super Nintendo, and went to my girlfriend's parents' house for dinner, and that was about it.
Hold on. You still have a working Super Nintendo?
Yes. Well, we bought original Nintendo, Super Nintendo, a Nintendo 64, and I think that's all we got, but yeah, we have quite a collection of Nintendos now.
I know you're out in Edmonton there. Did you also go back in time?
Yeah, well, maybe. We found the DeLorean, so.
Oh, really sweet. Let's go back and find Jesus. I want to see if all those things he did were in the Bible were true. That's always been my, if I was ever to go back in a time machine, that's always the place I'd want to go, just to know definitively. Like, there's this book out there that says that he did all these, you know, magical things. I just want to see it for myself, you know what I mean? Color me a skeptic, but I just want to see it myself.
It's written by Holly Bibble.
You know what? She probably made a lot of money off that book. That's, I believe, the most sold book in the history of the world. So she got a pretty penny off that one.
Yeah. That would be a good time going back there, see what was up for realsies.
Yeah, I didn't spend my time going back in time, unfortunately. Just like you, watched some football. That was about it. That's about all I did. I was going to go to the movies, never did. But, you know, there's more time for that in the future. But, yeah, that was a small bye week for the two of us. No Ticat stuff, so I had to make time. You know, I had time. It was weird. I don't normally have free time.
I've been to the movies quite a bit lately, and it's just ridiculous how much, like, popcorn is and stuff these days. Wouldn't you say? I mean, it's like $4 for a large popcorn.
I'm not a big eater at the theater.
No, I
don't normally buy food. Maybe every now and then I'll get a drink. There's this theater in Oakville in Mississauga that has this amazing soda machine where you can pretty much pick you pick a base pop. So like it's all Coke products. So you got your Cokes, your root beers, whatever, and then you can put flavors in them. And I had to go there last year to watch a movie because it was the only theater that was playing a film I wanted to see. And this thing blew my mind. I was like, I know this is like a 45 minute drive from my house, but it's like I have to keep coming here to go to movies, because the soda machine was just so incredible. So yeah, that's about the only thing I ever get when I go to the movies. I like you, they're just so overpriced, just like stadium food. They're just ridiculously overpriced, so it's really not, I don't find it to be that worth it. I'm not a big popcorn guy to begin with, and then you get into like the hot dogs and stuff, and it's like, no thank you. It's like buying hot dogs from 7-Eleven.
Do you smuggle snacks into the theater?
Well, sometimes I will take a bag of candy or like a bag of chocolate bars, like, you know, those mini ones, like Reese Minis or York Peppermint Patty Mini, stuff like that, every now and then. But most of the time, I'm just, give me one of these Cokes with strawberry vanilla flavoring, and I'll just sit and watch the movie.
Oh, well, that's an interesting discussion we just had.
Yeah, we don't usually talk about anything about football, and I guess we were bored this week if we're going to talk about going to the movies and concessions at the film.
Yeah, well, it's a bye week, so.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we have no game review this week because the Ticats were off. We have no bold predictions that we were wrong on. So, hey, we didn't get anything wrong this week.
Yeah, that's a...
Huzzah to us.
It's refreshing.
There's not even really any Ticat news. They signed a bunch of guys, I guess. The big one was they brought Mark Dial back. I guess he's pretty much coming in to be insurance because Jake Olsen got hurt. And Bakari Grant was back at practice today and looks like he's good to go for the week. That's pretty much all the Ticat news we have for this week, too. Not much to really say about the team.
Yeah, that's good news to get Bakari back in the lineup. You know, he brings a lot to the team. So I don't know who they're going to kick out of the starting receiving corps, but he's a great addition anytime you get him back.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Who is going to sit? Maybe Underwood? But Underwood's been playing a lot of wide receiver, and Bakari's more of a slot back where we've seen mostly Sinkfield, and they're not taking Sinkfield out of the lineup. He's been on fire. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who sort of gets the seat on the bench.
Yeah, I wonder if they maybe take him out of the slot and put him out wide receiver.
Yeah, but, maybe. I guess we'll find out on Friday.
Yeah, but he had a lot of success early in the year in slot, so I guess we shall see.
We shall see. It just adds another weapon to the team to help out Jeff Matthews, who will be making his first start on Friday, which we will get into later in the show when we give our game preview. But yeah, having Bakari back, big thumbs up in my book.
Yeah, for sure. He's a great player.
Yeah, so let's get into some CFL news then. This is going to be a pretty Ticat light show, but we're still not light on CFL content. So did you see, or hear, I should say, the comments Michael Sam made on the Dan Patrick radio show this week?
I saw some reaction to it on Twitter. I saw some of the quotes. I didn't hear the actual show, but yeah, I got the gist of it.
Okay, so here's the quote for anyone out there who didn't hear it, although I doubt highly that anyone who's listening to our show isn't fully aware of what Sam said. But just in case anyone out there didn't hear it, here's what he said. I never really wanted to go to the CFL, but I did it, and I committed to going. I want to thank the Montreal Alouettes for all they've done for me, but I wasn't getting better as a football player. That was one of the main keys. I wasn't getting better as a football player. It was a different defense, a defense I wasn't used to, and all that stuff I learned from the Rams, the Cowboys, I thought I was losing that technique in Montreal. Now, you mentioned the comments made by people. You noticed they were mostly negative in nature?
Yeah.
I saw some people call him a clown. I saw people say that he just can't play football. Here's the thing, and this is probably not going to be a very popular opinion. We always talk about how the CFL and the NFL, we don't like to say which one's better. And yet, when a player like Sam comes out and says that playing in the CFL wasn't going to help him play in the NFL, we kind of jump all over him, and I'm not entirely sure if we should. He's basically saying playing in this different league wasn't helping him keep the technique that he would have to succeed in the NFL. And I don't really see a problem with that. What did you sort of think of his comments?
Well, he said he was fully committed. I don't think he was committed. I mean, he wasn't, you know, we don't know this, what happened with a personal issue or whatever, but I don't think he was committed to the team. I don't think that, I think that he was getting special treatment from the team, and I think that players on the Alouettes might have resented him for it. So I could see that maybe, you know, that you have to have a different technique in the CFL 1 yard off the ball, and maybe it was changing his technique a bit, but it, you know, he doesn't, I'm not sure if he has much, the only options I see for him is play well in the CFL and maybe the NFL will take a look at him again. Well, that's not going to happen now because he quit on the team twice. So I see what you're saying about maybe that the technique was different and it wasn't helping him, but I don't see another avenue for him getting to the NFL if he's not going to give, you know, his all in the CFL.
I agree with you there. I don't know if he's ever going to get an NFL shot, to be perfectly honest. I think he could have made, if he would have committed fully, and I'm with you again, I don't think he committed fully up here. It didn't really seem like his head and heart were all into it. And I think if he would have committed up here and played well, he could have gotten another shot down south. We're never going to know now. It pretty much does look like his football career is over. But again, like I said, my sort of problem with people jumping all over him was more of the fact that he just said playing up here wouldn't make him better to play in the NFL. And I just don't like the idea that we kind of want to have it both ways. You know what I mean? We want to have it where people look at the CFL as a different game and don't compare it to the NFL. But then when a player comes up here and doesn't succeed and says, I didn't really want to play up there because I didn't think it was going to help me in the NFL, we jump all over the guy. I just don't think it's fair. It's kind of sucks that Michael Sam, who was very unimpressive in his, I think, what do you only play one game, I think, up here.
Yeah, one game, and he was a rotation player at best.
Yeah, I think it's kind of sucky that he's the guy that I'm using as an example here, but I don't think he's necessarily wrong in saying that playing for the Alouettes wasn't going to help him play for a team in the NFL. How many CFL guys really truly make it in the NFL? It's very, very few. So maybe he kind of has a point. Like,
yeah.
We've seen a guy like Andy Fantuz, who we know is a good football player, go down to try out for an NFL team and not get a shot. Now, you could say he's Canadian, he's not very fast. Okay, that's fine. But what about Weston Dressler? Weston Dressler may be small, but about the same size as Wes Welker was, who had a pretty decent NFL career. He goes down, what was it, the last year to the Kansas City Chiefs and really never even got a shot to play. So maybe some players are just suited for the CFL more than the NFL, and maybe some guys are more suited to the NFL than they are to the CFL, and maybe Michael Sam just isn't suited to play professional football. To say he's not a good football player, I think, is a little silly. He's not a good professional football player. He was a great player in college. He was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year. Guys don't win that award because they're not good football players. So I don't know. I just kind of wanted to get that out there because I saw everyone sort of attack the guy, and I wasn't really on that bandwagon.
Yeah, I hear where you're coming from. I just think that, you know, to say that it wouldn't help him get back to the NFL, it's not going to help him get back to the NFL quitting on the team and not playing football at all. So that's just my opinion there.
No, you're definitely right. I don't disagree with you at all there. He's pretty much, I think, exhausted his options in the NFL anyway. A team drafted him and they cut him, and then he went to another team and they cut him. And like you said, if he's not playing football somewhere to at least have some game tape and a resume, what is he really going to show teams that they didn't already see back in 2014 when he was drafted?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't see him playing pro football anywhere from, you know, I think it's just done for him.
So let's move on. I caught a tweet earlier today that made me laugh. Apparently, according to Rod Peterson out in Saskatchewan, Tom Higgins has applied to be the general manager and head coach of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Not surprising. Higgins has been a coach in this league before. I was just tickled at the idea that he applied for the job because it made me think of him knocking on doors with a resume in his hand, applying for jobs like one, like a teenager would, looking for their first high school job. It just made me chuckle.
Yeah, I guess it might happen more than we think because we just don't hear that term, you know, when teams are looking for head coaches or GMs, you know, they applied for the job. It's like you said, like a teenager applying at McDonald's or something. But Rod Peterson probably has good connections with the Rough Riders, so that might be true, but he's not doesn't exactly have the best sources in the league, so you never know with him.
What do you think? I think you and I should maybe be co-GMs in Saskatchewan. I know your fantasy team's not doing super great. Mine's doing amazing right now in our league, but I think together, I think we could be a two-headed monster to get the Rough Riders back on top of the league. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, that'd be a high-pressure job, but I think we could handle it. Apply our non-professional fantasy league talents to the professional level real football.
Hey, didn't you finish second in our league last year?
Yeah, I lost in the championship game.
Yeah, I finished third. I'm tops in our league this year. I've won two NFL fantasy leagues in the past, so I can scout NFL talent, that's for sure.
And we're
Canadians. If there's anyone out there in Saskatchewan that can get our resumes into the hands of the decision makers in the Rough Rider organization, you hit us up. I will put together a presentation that will knock their socks off.
Well, too bad they didn't have a ratio in the front office for front office jobs in the CFL.
Oh, like a Rooney rule for the CFL, but they have to interview Canadian podcasters and bloggers?
Yes, exactly.
I'm putting my name out there in the hat. I am applying for the Rough Riders GM and head coaching position. Now, maybe not the head coaching position. I don't really want to coach. I'll GM, but I just need to know who to get my resume in the hands of, and you're sending me yours, and we're stapling those together because we're going to co-pilot this ship. We're going to get the Rough Riders back on top. So what's this about the CFL landing in Los Angeles?
Well, that's what Rod Peterson said on Twitter, I think it was last week. He said that owner of an NHL team has inquired about getting a CFL franchise in LA. So
this is insane, right?
Yeah, it's totally nuts. I mean, we know what happened when the league went south of the border in the 90s. It didn't do so hot, except for in Baltimore, where they got pretty good crowds out there, pretty good, you know, they've followed the team pretty well until they, you know, folded because they got their NFL team back. But yeah, it's, you know, LA, it's just a crazy, crazy rumor as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, the Grey Cup in LA would mean the weather wouldn't be an issue. Travel might be for every CFL fan, but the weather would be nice. I'm sure the players would like it. But yeah, this has got to be, I'm not a joke necessarily, but this is so far-fetched and out of the realm of possibilities. I just had to laugh.
Well, because aren't they talking about moving the Rams to LA?
The Rams, maybe the Raiders, maybe the Chargers, maybe two of those three teams might move to Los Angeles. LA's going to get an NFL team back sooner rather than later. They're building a stadium there, I believe. And like you said, Baltimore was great for the CFL. They got good crowds. They were a very competitive team. Might help, but, you know, they had Jim Popp as a general manager who has since been very successful with the Alouettes. So maybe LA could work for a year or two before an NFL team comes. But as soon as an NFL team comes, the people in Los Angeles would stop caring about the CFL and they'd fold. It's truly, truly not going to happen. I just think, like I said, this is insane.
Yeah, the media coverage, you know, in LA would just be terrible. You got the, you know, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Kings, Dodgers, the Angels.
The goes Ducks.
On. Yeah, the Ducks. It goes on and on and on. They'd be buried in that climate. So it's just, and where would they play? Like, I don't know, a suitable stadium. I'm sure they have plenty of stadiums that are, I'm not sure, to be honest, in 20,000, 25,000 seat range, but I can't wrap my head around it. It's just a dumb idea.
Yeah, I guess everyone can say whatever they want. Hey, I'm talking about bringing a CFL team to LA. All right, well, I'm talking about bringing one to the moon. We'll see what happens first.
Oh, that could work.
Wait, they just found water on Mars, So maybe we can put a CFL team on Mars.
Really? I did not hear that.
Yeah, it just came out on Monday that they found it was either slow-moving water and ice, or I didn't catch the whole thing. I just heard a snippet of it on the radio. But water is one of the building blocks of life. So that's up on there on Mars. You got water on Mars. I think we can build a 25,000-seat stadium up there. And, you know, well, maybe we'll do it when we, after 10 years of running the Riders, we'll then take the money we made getting them to 10 straight Grey Cups and I'll say winning 7 of them. I think that'd be a pretty safe estimate. We'll win 7 of 10 Grey Cups and take our money from Saskatchewan and go build a stadium on the moon and we'll have a team up there. Travel would be hell, but yeah, what are you going to do?
The Mars Martians.
All right, so this has completely gone off the rails with the silliness this week. I guess this is what happens when we have a bye and not very much to talk about. So let's get into the games. How about that?
Let's see it.
So did you watch the Stamps Bombers game? Obviously you did. Why do I even ask that question? What a stupid question. I ask stupid questions sometimes.
Get it together.
I'll try. Yeah. The force out rule on the Eric Rogers catch. You saw that play?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so the NFL did away with the force out in 2008, just saying it's too much of a judgment call. It's just too hard to call. Let's get it out of there. If you don't land in bounds, it's not a catch. Do you think the CFL should maybe look at making a similar change?
Judging on the catch that was made in the Winnipeg-Calgary game, you know, I thought he would have been out anyways without the push, so it was a tough call to make. But I do think it can come in handy because people, you know, the player can catch the ball and he could land in bounds and then the guy could just nail him out. So I kind of like the rule, even though it's such a judgment call. I think they should keep it in the rule book.
I'm not really on either side. I just think maybe taking the decision out of a referee's hands to make a judgment call on something that could very easily just be, if you don't get your feet in bounds, it's not a catch. Period. End of story. Might make for less errors, maybe. Because like you said, you thought he would have come out of bounds anyway. But the referees in the game said that he would have come in bounds. So maybe different people will see different things. And perhaps just not having that be an issue by just saying, no, foot in bounds, elbow in bounds, butt in bounds, whatever it is. One thing has to touch in bounds or it's not a catch might be the way to go. I don't think the CFL will ever make the change. I just thought it might be interesting in light of the NFL doing away with it nearly 10 years ago. And no one really complains about it down there. So it could probably work up here as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with it if they changed it. I'm with you. I don't go either way, so you know, I don't have a problem either way with the rule.
Yeah, that wasn't the most controversial catch, and I'm using quotation marks here, because there was a quote-unquote catch by Eric Rogers later in the game that just simply was not a catch.
No, I said that as soon as I saw it. I couldn't see it, you know, when it was played live, I didn't know if he caught it or not, but on the replay, you could clearly see the ball touch the ground, and it was not a catch, so yeah, that's a tough break for the Bombers, and, you know, more tough breaks will come in that game.
Well, apparently, Mike O'Shea, the head coach of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, didn't challenge the catch because his team did not have an adequate replay. Either the replay was not working, like the monitors they had in the coach's booth or whatever weren't working, or something was wrong with their replay system. So I'm kind of starting to wonder if maybe these coaches' challenges should be abolished and just everything becomes a booth review. I know we've kind of hammered the review crew over the course of this season by making some incredibly ludicrous calls, but I'm starting to wonder if maybe these coaches' challenges aren't the way to go, because if a technological mess up like this costs the Bombers, I believe Calgary kicked a field goal and Winnipeg lost by 3. So maybe, what do you think? Maybe the booth should just be initiating all challenges and the coaches should have really no say.
Now, when would they initiate challenges? Like whenever there's a questionable play? Because I don't want them looking at plays like every time there's, you know, a slight question.
Well, see, there, the game. Yeah, there's the problem. There's sort of the downfall, is that do we get into endless review? And I don't want that either. I just don't think it's fair in a situation like that where O'Shea didn't really have the choice. Now, I'm sure some will say he should have just thrown the challenge flag anyway. But like you said, viewing it live, I couldn't tell that it wasn't a catch. It was only on replay when it was like, no, he pounded that ball on the ground essentially to secure the catch, that it wasn't a catch. Again, it's not something that I'd be super for. It's not something I'd be against. I think college football, NCAA football in the States, I think they use automatic reviews. I think any sort of controversial play, the booth will call a challenge. I don't think they have a challenge system. I could be wrong. And I don't think those games go inexplicably longer than they should. Again, maybe it's something the league should consider looking at.
Yeah, maybe they could look at it in the off season, you know, no harm in looking at another way to lessen mistakes by the referees or the command centers. So, it's a tough break for the Bombers. You know, they just can't seem to catch a break.
You brought up the magic words, referee mistakes. They got hosed at the end of that game. You tell everyone what happened, because this was just ridiculous.
Well, it was a legal formation on 3rd and 1 with like 40 seconds to go. They're around the 40-yard line of Calgary. You're down by 3. And the refs calls a legal formation. And then we find out the next day that the refs screwed up, essentially. And, you know, that costs the Bombers a lot. I mean, they move the ball back. Now they don't have a first down. Now they have to kick a 50-yard field goal, which Haralahu misses, and game over. So just a huge mistake by the referees that, you know, it's good that they admitted that they made the mistake, but it doesn't give the Bombers another chance to win the game. So it's just a terrible thing that you hate to see in an important part of the football game.
Well, and especially in an important game for Winnipeg. A win there helps push them back into a playoff position. They're 2 points back of the Owls for third in the West, essentially, and a win there, and they're in third, and Montreal would have to leapfrog over Winnipeg. They have to have more points than Winnipeg. If they're tied, the team in the West would get in. This could have just dealt a crippling blow to Winnipeg's playoff hopes.
You know, Calgary just seems funny ways to win football games. Like, they just seem to win no matter what. It's just, it's just terrible to see. You know, I feel bad for Bombers fans. I said it maybe a couple episodes ago that it's just tough to be a Bomber fan in the last, what is it, since 1990, with little blips here and there. They just can't seem to catch a break.
Yeah, it does seem like they get the short end of the stick sometimes. You know, they get to the Grey Cup a few years ago, and they happen to play a team that's playing in their home park. So the entire crowd essentially... it's essentially a road game. And then the time before that they get to the Grey Cup, they lost their starting quarterback in the East Final. So they're playing with a rookie who's never started a game before, and they go on to lose that Grey Cup. And then the time before that, they were the best team in the CFL in 2001, and yet found a way to lose to an under 500 team in Calgary in the Grey Cup. They just seem to have bad luck. And I know we're not Bombers fans, obviously, but I do feel a little bad for them.
You know, what are they, 4-9 now?
I believe so, yes.
So, you know, the best they can do this year is a 9-9 record, and I don't know.
And that means they have to go on a tear at the end of the season and win every game, and I don't see that happening.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're Mike O'Shea or anyone in the Bombers organizations, you're pretty pissed about what happened last week against Calgary.
You gonna ask your question?
Oh, sorry, they lost you there. will Cornish go on a mad tear and win another rushing title?
A mad tear is exactly what he'd have to go on. I did some number crunching here. He's got 460 rushing yards in the season. He only trails 3 players, but Jerome Messam leads the league right now with 776 yards. You have Andrew Harris at 719 and Terrell Sutton with 619. Now, here's the thing. With all those guys, there's question marks. Messam, for some reason, doesn't get the ball. Since Bob Dice has shown up, after replacing Corey Chamberlain, in the games the Riders have won, Messam's had 17 and 15 carries. In the games they've lost, he's had 9 and 10. So, you know, how the Riders go sort of dictates whether Messam gets the ball or not. Harris just got hurt this week, and I don't think anything's been released unless you have some fresh information about how long he might be out. And Terrell Sutton seems to be injured every other week, and even when he's in there, it looks like he's going to share carries with Brandon Rutley, who, whenever he's in the lineup, looks really good. So, if Messam rushes for his per-game average, which is about 60 yards a game, that means that he would finish with just over 1,000 yards, and Cornish would need 123 yards a game over the rest of the season to catch him. Now, Cornish has only rushed for over 100 yards in one game this year, and it was back in July against Winnipeg, and it's against Winnipeg who he's had two of his best games against. You bring this one up because he had almost 100 yards against the Bombers this week. I think he's just too far behind. I honestly do. I don't think he will be able to catch Messam. I think with the Riders sort of being out of this, and they don't really have much to play for, I think getting Jerome Messam the rushing title might be what they'll do come the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season when they've been eliminated from the playoffs. So no, I don't think Cornish is going to do enough to win the rushing title for a 4th straight year.
Yeah, he did it last year when he played only 9 games? He was out for an extended period of time. I don't see it either happening. You know, he had a good game against Winnipeg this week. He could make a push, but I don't think he's going to overcome it. Like you mentioned, Sutton. I think Sutton's one of the best running backs in the league right now. He has pretty good numbers. So so maybe he could jump up and take the lead. Harris seemed to be hurt last week, and Messam, like you said, usually splits reps with Anthony Allen. So, I still don't see Cornish making that huge leap, going on a mad tear like the question asks. So, no, I don't see it either.
Well, here's the thing: this week he plays the Ticats, and the last two times they've played him, they've held him in check. So, if he doesn't get 150 some odd rushing yards this week, which I think is not at all likely, I just don't see him pulling this off. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I see the Ticats defense really stepping it up even more to support the team with Caleros out. So, I don't see Cornish having a huge game against the Ticats either.
Well, and as we know, when he plays the Ticats, he's a decoy anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't really matter. So let's move on to the second game of the week, which was Edmonton's come-from-behind victory over BC. Now, you're out in Edmonton now. Did you go to this game?
I did not. Not this game.
Not this one.
I'm going to the next one, though.
You missed a pretty good comeback there.
Yeah, I know.
You also missed a pretty good showing from a rookie quarterback by the name of Jonathan Jennings. He couldn't get the win, but he looked pretty good for BC in his first start. So I want to know, are you all in on Jennings, or are you taking a wait-and-see approach?
You know, he was good last week when he came in, too, and he played pretty good game against the Eskimos this week. I think he has a lot of potential, but I've just been burned by quarterbacks coming in their first and second game, and I jump on the bandwagon and think, oh, this is going to be, you know, he's going to be a great quarterback. So I'm taking a wait-and-see approach, but I like what I've seen so far from Jennings. He's definitely better than John Beck, and maybe even a better option than Lule, because you know that he just, it's too bad, but he's just injury prone, and he just doesn't seem to be the same in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think Jennings is the future in BC. I'm with you, though. I'm taking a wait-and-see approach. Just the reason I asked you this is because you've been burned a couple of times. James Franklin, I remember you were talking big about. You obviously liked Rakeem Cato, as we both do, and we'll get into Cato in a little bit. I'm glad to see that you've learned from your errors of the past and are now going to take it a little slower on Jonathan Jennings, although he played well in relief, like you said, and he had a good first start. I am really excited to see what he can do in his next start.
Now that I said that, it'll probably be like an MVP, but...
Yeah, well, with the MOP race being so wide open, yeah, he's going to go out there, he's going to throw for 400 yards every game and four touchdowns, get BC back in the playoff race with MOP, and he's the one guy you didn't jump on early.
Exactly. we're talking about the Esks game this weekend. Will the Esks leapfrog Calgary and be first in the West at season's end?
Okay, so the only way to do this is by looking at both of their schedules and predicting what they'll do. So here's Edmonton's remaining schedule. They're at Winnipeg, at Calgary, at home to BC, at Saskatchewan. Their final game, they have the bye week, the last week of the season. In their final game, they have Montreal coming to Edmonton. So I have them beating Winnipeg, beating BC, beating Saskatchewan, and beating Montreal, and I left the Calgary game. That's a toss-up, obviously. So that puts them, minus the Calgary game, at 13-4. The Stampeders are at Hamilton, then they play Edmonton, then they're at Toronto, they have Saskatchewan at McMahon, and they end the season at BC. So I have them losing to the Ticats, maybe because I'm a bit of a homer, but also because Ticats are coming off a bye. That defense is going to be, you know what, I don't have to justify why I'm taking the Ticats. I think the Stamps trip up against Ticats this week, but I think they win the other, they beat Toronto, they beat Saskatchewan, the BPC, that puts them at 13-4. So my wishy-washy answer is whomever wins that game in 2 weeks in Calgary is going to get first. I'm going to say Calgary takes it and Edmonton does not catch the Stampeders. That's what I'm going
to
go with.
I'm going to have to, you know, it's such a crucial game, not this weekend, but next weekend, Calgary and Edmonton. I just don't see the Eskimos. If the Eskimos can improve on offense, then yes, I think they have a shot, but they really have to dig down deep and get something out of that more offensive production, because, you know, Calgary has the offensive production and they have a good defense. So I'm going to have to agree with you and say that Calgary ends up first in the West.
Honestly, if the game that they play, their third game this season, if it was in Edmonton, I'd be inclined to say the Eskimos would win that. But, like, what's up with Mike Riley? He has not really been that impressive since he's returned from injury. Maybe he's I know we talked about Riley last week, but, again, it was kind of a okay game he had against... who'd they play last week? Oh, BC, that's what we're talking about. It was an okay game, but they needed a furious comeback in the second half to beat a Lions team that isn't very good and hasn't looked very good for most of the season. I'm a little concerned about his level of play right now.
Yeah, I mean, the first half, the offense was just bad. It was just bad. most of the third quarter too. And then they came on in the late in the third and in the fourth, and they started doing things, actually, you know, moving the ball, scoring points. But they can't do that. They have to be productive throughout the whole game, and I haven't seen that, you know, from them. Maybe the one game against Toronto where James Franklin was starting, they had a pretty good offensive game that day. And even the game against Hamilton, when the Packats blew them out, they moved the ball quite a bit with Franklin. So Riley just hasn't been looking good at all, so I don't know what's up with him. It's just they have to get the offense going if they're going to expect to be first in the West.
Well, they've gotten their last two wins over a bad BC team. They wouldn't win that game against a better team, a Toronto or maybe a Hamilton or a Calgary. And Caleros' injury was essentially the reason they won a week ago in Hamilton. If Caleros is in that game, I don't think Edmonton wins that. Their offense was putrid against the Tie Cats 2 weeks ago. So they won those games, so they get full credit for the victories. That's the end game. You play these games to win, and they're a game back of Calgary for first, and they're definitely a playoff team and all that stuff. But yeah, that you're right. That offense just has to get going, or they could be in a lot of trouble. And I said they'd get to the Grey Cup at the beginning of the season, and I said Mike Riley would have a great year, but he hasn't looked good. And if he continues to look that bad as he has since he's come back, Edmonton's going to be in a lot of trouble come the end of the season. The third game of the week saw the Argos defeat Ottawa in Ottawa. This was actually an Ottawa home game, unlike the one they'll play next Tuesday, which is a Toronto home game in Ottawa, which is just insane. But the Argos got the win there, so maybe that gives them sort of a little bit of confidence going into the rematch. Because the Argos don't play this weekend. They don't play again until Tuesday, and then they play again on, like, Saturday or something. They got two games a week from now. It's a very strange little schedule quirk. But in the game, the Argos sat our friend, Vidal Hazelton, due to all those stupid penalties he's been taking. And I've got to wonder, is that sort of the end of his tenure in the double blue?
I'd say no. I think Milanovic was just showing him that, hey, you can't be doing this crap. You know, you have to smarten up on the field, stop taking stupid penalties. That'll sit him for a game, and I think he'll be back because he's been a productive player when he's on the field. He's had a great year so far, minus all the stupid stuff he's done. But I don't think it's over for him in double blue. I think he'll be back, and I think he'll be, you know, he'll have a better head on his shoulders and won't cause as much trouble and penalties for the Argos.
See, I agree that maybe this was sort of a Milanovic sending a message that, hey, you're not bigger than the team, smarten up, or you're not going to see the field. But Elliott and Gurley had great games as they've had at times during the season and looked well. Chad Owens actually looked decent for once and had a punt return touchdown. And the kid that replaced him, Deontay Spencer, who had replaced Chad Owens earlier in the year, made a bunch of plays too. So again, not necessarily saying he won't ever play for the Argos again, but it's not like they need him, and they won without him. So maybe it's not so much sending a message now as it is you've lost your spot and someone's come in and taken it.
Yeah, maybe it was to send a message, and maybe like the original thought was just one game and then he'll be back. But you're right. Spencer looks like a pretty good player. He's got great speed and he's making plays, and he made plays when he replaced Owens. So maybe you're right, and maybe he's just in a backup role now and doesn't see the field because Argos offense was pretty productive without him against the Red Blacks.
Yeah, and earlier in the season we talked about when Chad Owens was out and Spencer came in and played really well, if maybe Owens was on his way out of Toronto, but maybe he's that veteran presence that they keep around. You know, you always like to have a couple guys who have been in the league and sort of teach the new guys stuff. Spencer, every time he gets on the field, makes plays, so I don't see why you would take him off, especially if, you know, you have questions about whether Hazelton will keep his head on straight, and Spencer didn't take any stupid penalties, so maybe he's the guy they're going to go with going forward.
Yeah, I think you kind of convinced me. I could see that happening now, so I'm kind of with you now.
What do you think of sort of the scuttlebutt that, you know, Hazelton was teammates with Caleros in college, and maybe he might make his way down here if he's let go by the Argos?
That's interesting. I know I heard some rumblings that Caleros was trying to, you know, get the team to sign him in the offseason. So, you know, it'd be another player that the Argos released and the Ticats picked up, and maybe he gets his head together and, you know, is a productive player for the Ticats. You know, maybe Caleros really pushes for him to get signed.
The problem I only have with that is, where does he fit in? This team is loaded at receiver as is, and there's guys who can't get on the field now that are pretty good. I don't see where there's a spot for him, to be honest.
Maybe he gets signed in the offseason and there's, you know, they lose some players and then he can fit in, but I'm not sure about that either. You know, you're right. There's so much talent in the receiving corps that it's hard to fit in anyone that's not already there.
The one receiver I do know, American receiver that is only signed for this year, is Bakari Grant. And I got to think that if the Ticats let Grant get go to bring Hazleton in, that would not sit well with Ticats fans.
No, probably not. Might entice Grant to sign with the Argos because he'd probably be pretty peeved about it too.
Yeah, I heard early in the season during the run up to Labor Day, he was one of those guys who says, "I've been here long enough that I hate that team in blue." Mm. So if he was to, you know, hey, guys are going to do what they need to do to feed their families, and if he went and signed with Toronto, I wouldn't blame him. I wouldn't have blamed him if he would have done it this offseason when, you know, Hamilton was a little slow to bring him back, and when he's healthy, he's been the team's, I would say, their best receiver when he was on the field. So he's certainly earned a much larger contract. I don't know if that's going to come in Hamilton, but yeah, I could just see the furor online. I'm seeing the tweets in my head right now about Hazleton signing when they let Grant walk. It would not be pretty.
Now, is Trevor Harris and the Argos offense back on track? And will they make a push for first in the East?
I don't know if the offense is back on track. Ottawa's defense isn't super great. Like, Matt Nichols has had some good games against the Red Blacks, especially one week when he was in Edmonton. I think he threw for 300-something yards on them. So it's not exactly like Ottawa is out there shutting teams down like, say, Edmonton has been for most of the season. So I'm not sure if that offense has bounced back. It definitely looked good. I'll give them that. They played a hell of a game. They blocked for Harris well. They kept him clean. He was able to make his reads downfield. I was impressed by the way the Argos played. But I think it might be a little too soon to say that they're back. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, one game does make a season. So I'm going to have to see, you know, a string of games put together like they did at the start of the season to convince me. But they did look good. And the Red Blacks aren't the worst defense in the league. But like you said, they're not like at the top of the heap either. So it's a question mark for me right now. But it is, if I was an Argo fan, I'd be happy with the way they performed and maybe a little bit of optimism for the last six games of the season.
Now, your second question about them making a push for first in the East, similar to your Eskimos question, I sat down, looked at both Toronto and Hamilton's schedule and predicted the remainder of their season. So the Argos finish with a game that's a home game, but it's at Ottawa. Then they're at Montreal. Then they host Calgary, Montreal, and BC, and Winnipeg. Last four games are home games, but who knows how many of those are actually going to be played in Toronto. A couple of those could be Blue Jays playoff games, so maybe they're in Hamilton, maybe they're, who the hell knows, really. But even with everything being equal, I look at that schedule and I see 4 out of 6 wins. I think they lose to Ottawa and Calgary, but I think they beat Montreal twice, BC and Winnipeg. That puts them at 11-7. So the Ticats' remaining six games are Calgary this week, which we'll talk about in a bit. Then they have Saskatchewan coming here. Then they're at Montreal, at BC, and then back-to-back home here in Hamilton against Ottawa, and then they travel to Ottawa to take on Red Blacks in our nation's capital. I have them finishing 4-2. I think they beat Calgary. I think they beat Saskatchewan. I think they beat BC, and I think they win at home against Ottawa, and I think they lose at Montreal. You know, for some reason, Montreal just seems to have Hamilton's number, and the Ticats have not won in Montreal in 13 years. So with a backup quarterback, probably not the best scenario for the Ticats to break that run. And I think the Ottawa game will just be one of those ones where it's at the end of the season, and if they are 12-5 at the time, they will probably have already clinched first place and maybe will rest some guys. So I see the Ticats finishing 12-6. That's not good enough for Ottawa or for Toronto to catch them. So no, I don't think they make a push for first. I think they'll finish second, though.
Yeah, you think they'll be at Ottawa?
Well, they have the season series against Ottawa. So even with a loss to them in their next game, it would put Ottawa one game up, but I don't know. I didn't really look at the Ottawa schedule. Maybe I should have, but I still think I don't think Ottawa's going to get to 11 wins. I think 10 might be their max. Maybe they get to 9-9. Like, they're a good team, but they're not a great team. They're going to have hiccups. They're not a good road team. They've won a couple road games, but they've been against the lesser lights. They went to Calgary, just got smoked. I see the Red Blacks maybe finishing 9-9, which to me, don't get me wrong, that's a huge success for them in their second year to go from 2 wins to 9 wins and a playoff spot. But no, I think the Argos finished second behind Hamilton. Where do you stand on this?
I have to agree with you. I mean, it's going to be tough without Claros, but I think they'll find a way to get wins, even if they don't have huge offensive production. So I see the Ticats just slightly above the Argos. And, you know, if the Red Blacks finish 10-8 or 9-9, that's huge for the team and huge for the city of Ottawa. I mean, from going from 2-16 to 9-9 or 10-8 is just a huge success for them. So I see it Hamilton, Toronto, Ottawa in that order.
Yeah, I would like to see Ottawa finish second just because I'd like to see that crowd hosting a playoff game. I think that atmosphere would be amazing. I just don't think they're going to be able to do enough. That's all there is to it. So we both sort of, you know, when we throw these at each other before the show, it's not really a question. I guess we can just kind of lump these together if you don't mind. Saskatchewan got their second win of the season, relegating the 2003 Hamilton Tiger Cats to still the only one-win team in CFL history. So we still have that dubious distinction to hang on our mantles.
Boy.
But 2-11 is still nothing to brag about, fans in Saskatchewan, so don't get too high and mighty over this. But they put a pretty big beat down on Montreal on Sunday, so that offense in Montreal is, what the hell is going on? What can they do to fix their offense? And, you know, you were going to ask me about the quarterbacks, so is it quarterback related? Is it the problem, the offensive coordinator? Is, like, what can they do? Like, what the hell is wrong in Montreal on offense?
You know, they started Crompton, and he didn't look good at all. Threw a couple picks, you know, terrible completion percentage. And then they replaced him with Cato at half, and he didn't look that great either. He scored a late touchdown, like, with, you know, when it was in garbage time, essentially. So
didn't they score a touchdown on literally the very last play of the game?
Yeah, they did. They just look really bad. I don't get it. They have a good offensive line. They have talented receivers. I guess it might just be the quarterback position. I thought Cato might be able to fix that. You know, I'm not a big believer in Crompton. He's not going to do anything spectacular for the team. So, you know, I would ride with Cato, even though he didn't have a great second half when he came in. I still think he's a better option than Crompton, and maybe he can get it going, but it's a big question mark because they have a lot of talent on that Alouette offense.
I am with you. I do not know what people see in Jonathan Crompton. I honestly don't, and I would really like someone out there who is a Crompton guy to tell me what you see in him that I'm just missing. His completion percentages are terrible. He was 8 of 18 yesterday. That is under 50%. That's unacceptable. He was barely over 50% last week when they played Winnipeg. He's not good. I don't like, we make fun of Brian Brohm, and we make fun of Matt Nichols, and we've made fun of tons of quarterbacks in the past. I used to call Stephen Giles the one-eyed wombat. We've had bad quarterbacks in this league before, and yeah, okay, Crompton is quote-unquote a winner. You know who else was a winner? Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow won games in the National Football League when he was a starter in Denver, and everyone still thinks that he's a joke, and anytime his name's brought up and comes into the CFL, people laugh it off. Crompton is not good, and I really need some evidence from these Crompton guys to tell me why you think that he should be the starting quarterback in Montreal, because I'm 100% with you. It should be Rakeem Cato. He is just a playmaker at quarterback. Yeah, he makes his mistakes, but he's a rookie in this league. You live with those mistakes. They're still in a playoff position. They won games because of him earlier in the season. And like you said, talented offensive line. Talented as all get-out receiving core. And you didn't even mention their running backs, which are really good.
You know, Sutton and Rutley are a great duo. So.
And throwing Stephon Logan, who's a change of pace guy. And they have weapons on that team. And this offense just can't do anything.
You know, they fired their offensive coordinator. They fired their head coach. Jim Popp comes in. He says, we need to be an elite team. And they haven't been an elite team since he's taken over. So, you know, it's just, I don't know what to think about the Montreal Alouettes. They have all the talent in the world. Great defense, tons of talent on offense. They just can't seem to put it together, moving the ball and scoring touchdowns.
Jim Popp says some of the weirdest things sometimes. I remember when he was hired as the head, well, not hired necessarily as head coach, but took over for Higgins. He was at the press conference. He said, you know, we're 3-5 or whatever they were at the time, and said, well, we could very easily be undefeated. And I know their point differential and losses was very low, but they've been losing games the same way since he became head coach. Yeah, in his first game, they got that big win over the Ticats to break the Tim Hortons field streak, but that's probably the only game that they've really looked good in since Pop's taken over. It's just been terrible performances after terrible performances. And in that game, he came out and said, it's nice that we have two starting quarterbacks. Which two quarterbacks is he talking about? Is he talking about Anthony Calvillo and Ryan Dinwiddie? Because Jonathan Crompton is not a starting quarterback.
No.
Like, I know he's got quarterbacks on that stats. Does he still think Jeff Garcia works for him? And he's talking about Calvillo and Garcia. Like, who's he talking about?
They're two good backups, I'd say, but...
And if Cato was to develop, I think he could... I have long said that I think he has the physical tool set and the skills to be a good starting quarterback in the CFL, but they just need to give him the reins and let him go. Just give up on Crompton. It's done. Last year was a fluke.
Yeah, they can't be switching back and forth. You know, that's the worst thing you can do. Just, you know, tell them who's the starter, who's the backup. Put Crompton, you know, whatever. He is what he is. Maybe he'd be a good backup. Maybe he comes in and is a nice change of pace guy, like if Cato got hurt or something. But make Cato the starter. Ride with him for the rest of the year. You know, make him your guy, because they've been searching and searching since Calvillo retired, and they've had little blips here and there. You know, Troy Smith had his run in Crompton now. So you gotta stick with one guy and give it to Cato. If I were Jim Popp, I'd be going with Cato.
Let's move on to some actual Ticat talk. How about that?
Yeah, let's do that.
We've got a game to look forward to this week, and this would have been the marquee matchup maybe of the season if Zach Caleros hadn't gotten hurt. But we're moving on from that injury. Where I don't know about you, I think I do know, but I'll speak for you. We're fully behind Jeff Matthews, so this is Jeff Matthews' team now, and I think he's going to have a good game against Calgary on Friday.
Yeah, we can only hope. I mean, now there's no news about Gable or anything coming back.
I haven't heard anything about that. Just, you know, we said earlier at the top of the show, Grant. Grant will be back, and that's a big, big, big return for the Ticats, and that will help Matthews out immensely.
Yeah, I think they're going to come out firing this game. You know, they have a lot to prove now with Claros down. They want to prove that they're still an elite team in this league, and they're, you know, they're not done. So I fully expect them to come out and have a great game against Calgary. You know, I think it's going to be a tight game. Calgary's a great team, but by no means do I think that Hamilton is going to get blown out because Claros isn't in the lineup.
No, I agree. We said this last week when we talked about Claros' injury and how, yeah, it sucked, but this is a talented football team that we have in Hamilton. This is a good, good team. This is not a one-man team. And I just think that they need to tailor the offense now to what Matthews does well. I would like to see, you know, quick passes. Get the ball in the hands of Underwood and Tolliver and Sinkfield and Tasker and Grant and even, you know, Ray Hawley or Nick Grigsby or whoever's back there running the ball. Get in their hands quick. Let those guys get open in space and let them make plays. And don't throw the game on Matthews' shoulders. But at the same time, I don't think they should be afraid to let Matthews air it out. Like, we saw in the preseason. Wait, did you see the preseason game was the one that was streamed, wasn't it?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, so you saw Matthews play. He has an arm on him. He can throw. Oh, yeah. He had that beautiful, I believe it was to Terrence Tolliver, beautiful, like, 75-yard touchdown pass.
Rolling out of the pocket, too.
Yeah, so don't be afraid to let him throw the ball.
He throws a beautiful spiral, so I think this is the time of the year they need to start implementing the run game more, too, especially with Claros out now. So, you know, however you can, like, little screen passes, little, you know, sweeps, you know, hand off the ball, get a running game going, because I believe that Matthews can throw the ball around just fine, but they need to start running the ball. You know, the weather's starting to get cold, so this is the time to get the running game going.
Yeah, I agree. Screens, counters, draws. Get the ball in the hands of Ray Hawley, who has shown he can be a playmaker if he's given an opportunity. But doing those types of things will also keep Calgary's defense on their heels. They won't be able to pin their ears back and just rush Matthews and force him to make quick decisions. The more varied and dynamic the game plan is, the better the team has of being successful offensively.
Absolutely. So, yeah, you just got to cater to Matthews' strengths. You know, he's not, I don't think he's much, you know, he's not going to scramble as much as Claro, so it's going to be more of a pocket passer type game. But just like you said, I'm repeating what you said, just quick passes and get the ball into the talented receiver's hands.
It also helps, and, you know, you never want to see guys get hurt, but Calgary's going to be without two of their pretty big defensive players. Juwan Simpson and Joe Burnett are both going to miss this game and are both going to be out for some time. Now, they did sign former Ottawa Red Black defensive back Brandon McDonald to replace Burnett, but how much is he going to be able to pick up in what's essentially, 3 days, I guess, for practice time? Not a whole lot of time for them to get him up to speed on what they're going to do. And Juwan Simpson being out of the middle, I know that they have some talented linebackers waiting in the wings, but that's a big loss for Calgary, and the Ticats could exploit that.
Those are big losses for the Calgary defense. So Juwan Simpson in the middle is the leader in the linebacker core. So maybe they can attack up the middle with the run game and get some yards on the ground. And with Joel Burnett out in the secondary, so you never know. Maybe Hamilton has a big game offensively and surprises everyone.
It's possible. It's entirely possible. They've been off for a week, and that's a long time to give these mad scientists like Ken Austin and Tommy Condell a chance to whip up a game plan. And we've seen them do some out there things. They brought in Dan LeFever a couple years ago as a change of pace quarterback. They did it with Jeremiah Masoli in a game that clinched them a playoff spot back in 2013. So they could do a lot of things that could have not been seen by Calgary previously.
Yeah, I think they've been working, you know, night and day, I bet, to implement a plan for Matthews. And Matthews is a smart dude. You know, he went to an Ivy League school, so he's absorbing all this information, and he's been in the offense the whole year. So you just got to believe that this guy can carry us to a couple more wins and get us the first place in the East.
Condell and Austin know Matthews. They coached him for 3 years. They're not unfamiliar with him. This isn't a guy that they just brought in training camp and are now thrusting him into a starting role and hoping to figure things out. They know what he does well. It would not shock me if Matthews played a very, very good game. And, you know, I've already said the Ticats are going to win this game, so it might not be all on Jeff Matthews to win it, but I think they're going to get the W.
Is that your bold prediction?
That's not my bold prediction. I don't think it's that bold, to be honest with you.
Is your bold prediction, does it involve Matthews?
It might.
But you might have a secondary one.
Why, does yours involve Matthews?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to get to those in a second. I still have a couple more things I think we should touch on. Like, defensively, honestly, I think there's three things this team needs to do. They need to stop John Cornish, they need to slow down Eric Rogers, and they need to pressure Bo Levi Mitchell into making mistakes. Mitchell threw three of his 11 interceptions this year against the Ticats in week one, and that Ticat secondary is just as ball hawking as they've ever been. So if they can do those three things, I think they have a good shot at getting this W.
Yeah, and I have to throw in, I think you have to keep an eye on McDaniel as well, because, you know, he flies under the radar. And last game, he had a huge game. Like, I think it was over 150 yards. So, you know, this, he produces every game. So Rodgers is top of the league right now, and you got to keep an eye on him. But also keep an eye on McDaniel, because he can really hurt you in the Calgary offense. And like you said, you got to pressure Bo Levi Mitchell. This guy is not a superhuman, you know. He throws picks. If he's rushed, he will make mistakes. So if we can get some turnovers, that would be a huge assist to getting the win.
Here's the thing. Hamilton's defensive line, they're really, really good. That linebacking unit is really, really good. The defense as a whole is really, really good. There's no reason to think that they can't make Calgary make a bunch of mistakes. You know, fumbled balls, turnovers, anything. And you're right. McDaniel is a guy they have to look out for, too. He does fly under the radar, and that was my mistake to not mention him. But it's tough when the league's leading receiver is there, and he's making plays every week. I'm kind of curious if Emmanuel Davis follows him around the field, because that, to me, would be one hell of a matchup.
Davis is proven to be one of the best defensive backs in the league this year, so it would be quite the matchup, him and Rodgers, did you mean him and McDaniel?
I meant him and Rodgers.
Oh, yeah, him and Rodgers, that'd be a really interesting matchup, especially, like, you'll be live at the game, you could really focus in on that, so that'd be really cool to see.
Yeah, I expect more of McDaniel will be guarded by, I guess, Eric Harris. Usually that far side linebacker tends to usually get that inside slot guy, and that's where McDaniels makes his money. So I could see a lot of Harris coverage on McDaniel.
Any word on if Brandon Banks is okay? Is he going to play this week? Because I heard he was roughed up a bit.
Yeah, and I saw some stuff that he didn't practice yesterday on Sunday, but that was an extra day of practice, and I didn't see anything about him not practicing today, although a guy like him I don't really think needs a ton of practice time. If he's in there the last 2 days of practice, I think he'll be fine. Yeah. And if he can't go, as much as that stinks, Terrell Sinkfield's out there, and he's been a special teams player of the week in the past, and he's pretty good in the return game, so it's not a huge loss. And then they could probably also throw a Quincy McDuffie or a Junior Collins out there to be that secondary return guy as well. So yeah. as much as we both love Brandon Banks, he's not entirely irreplaceable by the guys the Ticats have on the roster.
Yeah, like you said, Sinkfield can do it. McDuffie has proven to be a dangerous returner when he's in there. So they have a lot of depth in the return game. But it would be huge for the team if they could get a lift from the special teams, you know, get maybe a touchdown, just some better field position, you know, to start off. It would be a huge lift for the team.
For sure, for sure. So you ready to make some bold predictions?
Yep, I'm ready.
Okay. So I'm going to guess that yours is Jeff Matthews, and you're going to make me go with my secondary pick?
Yeah, I'll say mine. I think Matthews throws for 250, two TDs, and no interceptions.
So my secondary one is Terrell Sinkfield. I think he goes for over 100 yards and catches two touchdowns.
All right. He, to me...
I want to talk about him for a second before we move on to the Twitter questions. I've been trying to think of, with Kolaros now out, who is Hamilton's MOP candidate? And I think it's Terrell Sinkfield. Hmm. I think Kolaros might still get the nomination, but I'm not necessarily sure if he should. He had a great year, and he would have been MOP if he would have kept playing, but he's going to miss the last six games now. So who has stepped up and just been phenomenal all season long? It's pretty much been Terrell Sinkfield. Ever since he got back in the lineup after getting pulled, he has been on fire. He's on pace for over 1,000 yards receiving. He's been a go-to guy. He's been making plays over the field. I think he's got to be the guy. I know you're a big Sinkfield fan. I know that. You've been talking about him all season long. I think he's my MOP pick right now.
Yeah, he's really stepped up his game. I could see that. With all the receivers' injuries and all that stuff, he's been really standing out. So, you know, if he keeps playing the way he's playing and, you know, gets some more touchdowns, racks up some more yards, I could see him being the MOP for the Ticats for sure.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be the league MOP or even the divisional MOP, but I think he could. Like you said, if he continues to rack up the yards and the scores, I think he's the guy that they're going to pick. He would get my vote with Kolaros for the year. So we'll see if that means anything come the beginning of November. So that's it for the game preview. Let's get into Mike's segment, the questions from our listeners. What do you got for me this week, Michael?
All right, I got one from All Kinds of Clay. What adjustments will the O make now that Kolaros is out?
Well, I think we touched on that a fair bit. Quick passes, maybe not so much zone read because, like you said, Matthews is not exactly Captain Mobile. He's not a statue back there. He can move, but he's not.
He can move around.
Yeah, he's not Doug Flutie, so he's not going to be busting off big runs. So I see more of maybe having a traditional pocket passing type offense with some. They'll mix in runs and stuff like that, but maybe jet sweeps and wildcat stuff. They'll do a bunch of different things to sort of get this offense to be not predictable. You know what I mean? And maybe. Like you touched on this earlier, maybe they implement much more of a running game to take the pressure off. And whenever CJ Gable comes back, you know that he's going to get a ton of touches. So when that happens, you know the running game is going to be a focal point. So those are sort of the things I see. What do you see?
I see, you know, when Gable comes back, it changes the whole offense. So I see a lot of jet sweeps with Sinkfield and Banks getting a lot of touches in the backfield, you know, switching it up, not just using the running back to run the ball, but using our speedy receivers to run it as well. And pretty much everything you said, I was going to say, you know, the quick passes, the screen passes, it's just going to be a little bit different. But I think that the offense can still be productive without Caleros in there. You know, you don't necessarily need, you know, we've seen with Calvillo over the years, he was pretty much just a pocket passer, and the Alouettes had lots of success. So I'm not saying Matthews is Calvillo or anything like that, but a pocket passer can be extremely productive and have a lot of success in the CFL.
Yeah, Ricky Ray's a pocket passer, and he's one of the best QBs this league has ever seen. And you mentioned Calvillo. You don't have to have a running threat at quarterback to be successful. It's not unheard of for a pocket passer to succeed. Maybe the greatest quarterback in Ticats history, at least the greatest quarterback in my lifetime that I saw play in Ticats history, was Danny McManus, and he was essentially a statue. So you can be successful with a pocket passer. You just have to do other things well. And we talk about this Ticat team having a ton of talent. They have enough talent to make up for the lack of a dynamic player at quarterback.
Okay, so from B. Broom, CFL. Our record for the remaining games is, so I think you said it was 4-2.
Well,
earlier.
I said 4-2. So do you want me to give you Hamilton's schedule and you can make your predictions on who, what they win and where they lose?
Yeah.
Okay. So Calgary.
Who, I'm going to say a close loss.
Oh, a close loss. Okay. Saskatchewan?
Win.
At Montreal.
You know, I know it's been tough going in there and winning, but I'm going to give them a win there.
Okay, at BC?
You know, they've had a rough time over the years in BC, but I'm going to give them a win there, too.
All right, home to Ottawa?
I'm going to say a loss.
They're going to lose at home to Ottawa?
Yeah.
Wow, and then they end the season in Ottawa.
Yeah, I get the win there.
Okay, so you got Calgary as a loss, Saskatchewan as a win, Montreal as a win. Or did you say Montreal as a loss? No, you said Montreal as a win.
Yeah.
BC as a win?
Yeah.
Ottawa as a loss, and Ottawa's win. So you got them 4-2 as well. We just disagree on those, what 4 and what 2.
Yeah, so 4-2, and so that would finish 12-6, which would be...
It would have to be first place.
Yeah, that would tie the record for the best record in Ticats history.
Most wins in Ticats history is 12, so they would tie that record.
Okay, so yeah, that would be my prediction, and that would be a great finish to the season. We touched on this earlier, but well, Joe's a good guy, and he's always contributing to the podcast. So USFL Tecmo... Crompton, Cato, Bridge, other, what would you plan going forward at Montreal QB?
Like you said, we talked about this earlier. I'm going Cato all the way, no doubt. He's the guy I'd go with if I'd run that show.
Yeah, totally agree. Got to go Cato. He brings the most production to the team. You know, he's a threat running the ball. He's a pretty good passer. He makes his mistakes, but you got to go with the young kid and see what he has. And he's your best option if you're Montreal, in my opinion.
Best option now. I would, however, be interested to know if they will kick the tires on one of those Argos QBs that might be available in the offseason. Both Ricky Ray and Trevor Harris are free agents at the end of the year, and there's no way the Argos can bring both of them back. They both will command start, like Ray's one of the highest paid players in the league, and yeah, he's missed all season, but I've seen no evidence that he could not go back in there and be one of the top QBs in the CFL again. And Harris has played so well that he deserves a starter shot and starter's money, so maybe the Alouettes aren't so keen on the guys they have now, and they're biding their time to get one of those guys. And would Pop bring in Ricky Ray at 35 or 36 really be all that surprising?
35, 36, you know, you could get, if you're lucky, 4 more years out of the guy. And if you can build a great, you already have a pretty good offensive line there. So if Ray can have time back there, and not, I know he's had his injury troubles, but if you can keep him off his butt, he could give you some more years and maybe a championship or two. So there's an interesting situation going on in there, Toronto, with the Harris, Ray, both pretty good quarterbacks. So they're going to have to make some decisions in the offseason.
I think that's going to be the one story we talk about ad nauseum on the podcast when the season's over. I think that's the big story. That what the Argos decide to do at quarterback is probably where the dominoes are going to fall. If Ricky Ray's a free agent, there's going to be a lot of teams going after him. I'm kind of curious as to where he would land. Much more so than Trevor Harris. I like Trevor Harris. I think he's a good quarterback. But where a future Hall of Famer goes to pretty much end his career, I'd love to see him go back out west just so he's not in our division, possibly kicking our butts again. I'm going to be very curious to see what Toronto does there. Like you said, that's a very interesting situation.
Yeah, it'll be closely followed in the offseason for sure.
Is that the last one?
That's all she wrote.
So, as always, don't forget you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you want to have one of your questions read, like the gentleman who submitted theirs today, you can hit Mike or myself up on Twitter. Give them your Twitter handle, friend.
Mike_Ticats.
I'm at @JoshSmith_82. And feel free to post a question in the comments section of 3 Down Nation. We did not get any this week, but we've got them in weeks past, so we'll probably get them again. So that is Podski Weeby for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.